Did Choo Choo Rocket originate on the Dreamcast? I think it did.
It did. It was only a Japanese import for the longest time, and then somehow it got ported overseas, and then Sega was just like, all right, screw it, let's just start releasing it. So
there's an Android version of Choo Choo Rocket.
Yeah, dude. Sega's gone the way of the Village Bicycle, man. Everybody's taking a ride. Which is just the saddest thing.
Or the town whore. Welcome to episode 93 of One More Podcastle, part of the Retroids.com podcast network. My name is Eric Bailey. Slowpoke is my spirit animal, and I am the editor-in-chief of OneMoreCastle.com.
My name is Eric Hunter. I am the audio engineer, and I am a fish out of water.
I am Joshua Caleb, author of the Retro Hate column, and my parents are undead.
How are the holidays? Like, rather than going to Honey Bake Ham and getting a ham for Christmas, you got to go to the morgue and, like, get a leg?
Yeah, like for Thanksgiving, instead of having Thanksgiving dinner turkey, you have Thanksgiving brains?
No, not brains. Those are a little mushy and kind of tough.
And delicious?
No, I've never been one for brains.
You can say that again.
And so it begins.
Zing!
See, the other problem with eating brains is you have to deal with the whole reliving the person's memories kind of thing. And that just gets...
Now, see, not everyone has that power. I think that's just kind of a your family trait.
How else are you going to steal their soul? I mean, let's be honest.
Right.
True, but then you have all of that extra emotional baggage. As if...
Don't we all have an emotional baggage?
But then you're just multiplying it, because every time you eat someone's brain, you get more emotional baggage from that person, and...
Well, you know, I used to be a freelance emotional baggage handler. You can hire someone to handle your emotional baggage for you if you want.
I've seen him do it. He's good.
How much does that cost?
About $400 an hour. I mean, maybe you don't need more than, say, an hour every few weeks, but, you know, just really take the load off.
This is going to be an interesting episode.
I will carry that baggage for you from point A to point B. So, have you guys played any old video games lately?
Actually, I have.
What? You?
Yes.
This guy? That's crazy.
No way.
I have actually been playing some of the games I've bought on GOG recently.
Actually playing your backlog.
Most notably, I've been playing Blood Rain and Blood Rain 2. Mostly Blood Rain 2.
Do tell.
So I think that's better.
Good game, bad game, annoying.
Yeah, Blood Rain 2 is probably better than the first one. The action is pretty interesting. Not exactly challenging, because you're like a super overpowered Damphir and you're just fighting lowly little humans. So the easiest way to get through a level is to just jump on one, just jump on someone, start sucking their blood and rotating them so that they're facing the people shooting at you. So you get a refreshing snack and a human shield all in one.
What is with you and cannibalism tonight? That seems to be a thing.
I have been on a vampire kick a little more than normal recently.
Okay. Any particular reason? Is there something we should know?
I do have a fondness for vampires. I just happen to be exploring that fondness a little more than usual.
But for any special occasion, or is it just kind of happen, like, serendipitous lately? Just no particular reason.
Mostly serendipitously, because GOG put Blood Rain 2 on sale.
Ah, that'll do it.
So I bought it, started playing it. Bought the first one, started playing it, watched the movies, wished I hadn't.
Yeah, I heard they're really bad. The Uwe Ball or Uwe Ball, yeah, you, or whatever
Uwe,
his name is.
Uwe Bullocks.
Yeah, I don't know.
Uwe Butts.
Like, so yeah. I don't know a lot about that guy, but apparently he's a pompous asshole, which I've got no problems with. But the last bit of news that I heard about him, other than the awful movies he's directed and released, apparently he was on a show called The Table or The Dinner Table, where he was a special guest. And the idea of the show was just to sit down with writers and directors over a meal and just casually talk about the industry and what they're working on and stuff like that. Huh. They buy really expensive bottles of wine to enjoy with the meal. And apparently he was the only person to bring his own beverage to the show.
That
like
is
he refused
a tacky
to drink
move.
Yeah. anything else.
That's tacky.
And I'm like, you're an asshole. Like,
it was blood, right? It was a blood wine.
No, it was like a diet. It was like a Diet Coke or something, or like a Surge or Mellow Yellow or Faygo or something. Like,
who drinks diet soda?
That guy.
I'll tell you this: I would never pay for it. Someone has too much of it. I'll drink it. Whatever. I don't.
There you go.
I think he also challenged a film critic to a boxing match once upon a time. And not like in a figurative way. Like, he actually is an amateur fighter. Like, he legitimately actually wants to punch his critics in their faces in a real life way.
That...
Aren't we all amateur fighters? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I've been in a couple of fights. I don't prefer to fight, but I've been in a couple of fist fights.
I haven't been, but I really want to be. That's one of my quirks. Like, I really want to be in a real fist fight someday. I've been really close.
Really want to get my ass kicked
by
a bunch of dudes.
Well, it's
and
weird.
Then wake up 3 hours later without my wallet and my shoes.
I'm not even kidding, though. There've been two or three times, not recently, but... Like, I've come really close to a fight. Like, I could tell the other guy wanted to fight. But then once he detected that I was actually down for it, they're like, oh, well, we're just kidding. It's like, really?
Your imposing stature frightened them off.
Maybe. That and my fearlessness. I don't know. I guess.
It was a mirror.
A sharp elbows. I'm gonna fight you. No.
No, I'm just, I don't, no,
multiple
I'm good.
Personality
I'm
disorder.
Good. I don't want to, no. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my hair's messed up. I've been playing old video games, too.
What have you been playing?
I played an NES game called Rock N Ball. Rock apostrophe N Ball.
Okay.
Yeah. So, it's a pinball game, and it's actually a bunch of different pinball games in one. So, like, you have your traditional pinball where, you know, you pop the ball, you got your flippers, that kind of thing. You can actually play up to four people. What's the word when you take turns?
Hot seat?
That'll work, yeah. So that's kind of neat, you know, high score, that kind of thing. And then there's some other games where it's like pinball bingo, where you actually have to try to get so many, you got to knock so many of the pinballs in certain spots to make either like a line going across or diagonally or horizontally.
Sounds terrible.
It does, but it has pinball sports. So there's pinball soccer and there's pinball hockey, and it's exactly what you think it is. So like in pinball hockey, you play two players, each on either side of the hockey rink. You have a goalie. And you have your flipper who acts as like, you know, the forward or you know, just the in-between hockey player. So you're bouncing the ball back and forth. You can control the goalie going back and forth to try to protect the net. If the ball goes in the net, then you score a point. Like, it's the weirdest thing because the way that it works is if the gravity of the pinball is in a three-dimensional space. So, like, it kind of goes up to, like, a triangle. So, once the ball gets to the center, it, like, rockets down because it's a downslope. But since it's a 2D game, you can't really see the depth of field. It's the weirdest thing.
So, it's like gravity gets reversed every time it hits the center.
Yeah. So, like, and the camera is not that fast. Like, it keeps track of the ball, but they don't have the entire playing field with on the screen at one time. So, like, it'll get to the center, and then it'll, like, gravity will take hold and pull it down, And then suddenly it's like, oh shit. And you're like, you know, flipping your flappers. And it's like the coolest thing I've played in a really long time. Like, it would be a great party game to get people together and have like tournaments, you know, and do like a round robin.
Yeah. That awesome. Sounds like something that would work better on a big screen TV with HD graphics and actual three-dimensional polygons rather than sprites.
Yeah. So, like, I did a little research into the game because I had never heard of it before. So when I picked it up, I'm playing it, and I'm like, wow, this game's actually kind of fun. Like, there's some stupid stuff that nobody, you know, just the regular pinball, like, game is just dumb. But that, like, the sports stuff was really neat. So I started doing some research. Like, nobody really knows what this game is. Nobody's really heard about it. You know, like, there aren't any, like, remakes or anything that's even remotely inspired by it that's been released recently. So, I don't know. Like, it seems like competitive pinball hockey would be a hell of a game to watch people play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be the weirdest thing.
Yeah. Oculus Rift, man. Let's do it.
There you go.
Get a small business loan.
The only thing I've had trouble with pinball games is actually being able to see the entire board at once.
Yeah.
Because all of our screens and displays in our electronic gaming devices are horizontal, not vertical.
Right. No, you're right. Because, I mean, when it was 4x3, when that was the standard, like, it's not that big a deal, but now it's 16x9. Yeah, there's, like, you can turn a computer monitor on its end and change the orientation to make it go top to bottom, but kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, I've seen several pinball games on like the PSP or Vita where you have to hold it sideways.
Oh, that's so weird.
Yeah, it's. And then you like you have to use the face buttons and the D-pad to try and do the flippers, and it's really awkward.
Huh. Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, I kind of get used to, like, especially pinball games now since they're, you know, 3D or whatever. Like, it's always kind of like that, what's the word for it? Like that horizon.
The horizon line?
Yeah, yeah. So it's like you can see the entire playing field, but it's like, like, it gets small. I don't know. Like, it's kind of silly.
It gets smaller as it gets taller.
Right. Yeah. Or it's set up where it's like, okay, the screen's this, you know, a foot long. You only get half a foot. And then as the ball moves, it goes up. So
I hate it when a ball moves against my foot long.
I agree. It's a very. What have you been playing, Bailey?
Let's
get you,
you know,
in before.
I was actually.
Talk.
The universe is conspiring against me, which is fine. I didn't play anything this week, sorry. I was on vacation. I was.
All right, let's move on.
I spent more time on the beach than playing video games. But I will summarize one fun fact. I recently got to bring home some of my old Nintendo games from my childhood home. The instruction books,
nice.
I should say, actually. So like Tetris, the black and white caveman games I got from a pharmacy instruction book. You know, and NES Play Action Football, Kung Fu, Zelda's Revenge. So I like old Nintendo instruction books, especially when they had the original like artwork made just for. I mean, some of these are really special pieces. This is Kirby's Adventure. Yeah, and shout out to Tom Hall. Here you go, just for you, Tom, Captain Skyhawk, right there.
Yeah, I threw all mine away. So, well, I didn't. But
I never even had instruction manuals when I had NES games because I bought all of my games used.
Right.
So they never came with any. So I had to try and figure out how to play Karate Champ without a manual.
Ooh, that sucks, man.
That was fun. Somehow I actually managed to figure out how to play the freaking game and got good at it. Now I can't remember how I did that.
It's crazy.
So I go back to it now and I'm like,
so yeah,
instruction booklets.
Didn't play any games.
You suck. Because okay. I'm going on vacation on Saturday.
Ooh.
Could be gone for a week and a half, and I'm bringing my Super NES.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So
you don't suck, Hunter.
I don't.
That's
I mean,
one compliment from me tonight. You
just the
don't
thank you,
suck.
Bailey. Means the world to me. That's what I want a t-shirt that says "You don't suck." Eric Bailey.
See, but then that would be referring to everyone that read the t-shirt.
No. Some of them definitely suck.
So you'd have to have a t-shirt that says, I don't suck.
How about one that just says, Eric Hunter doesn't suck, usually.
Sometimes.
It's not really catchy.
Depends on the day. It just keeps going.
Yeah. You know what is catchy, though? The phrase, listener email discussion question.
Yeah, that's... Yes.
We have a decent one this week. Joshua should be fully unprepared for this, so...
Oh, yes, I should.
I look forward to your off-the-cuff response. I'm going to read it quickly so I can cue it in before I get booted off again. Here we go. Hello, gentlemen. It is with a heavy heart that I am unable to join you at Indie PopCon this year. Please have fun in my absence. Gives you an idea of when this was sent. For now, though, let's jump into the TARDIS and time travel back to the 80s. You are given ultimate power at Nintendo, and for fun, you decide to rearrange the release dates of two NES games. Instead of Super Mario Bros. Being the pack-in title for the $19.99 or the $99.99 basic NES set, what if The Legend of Zelda was the pack-in title instead, with Super Mario Bros. Being released a few years later? Does the NES still have the giant impact if Zelda's included instead of Mario? Zelda's a fantastic game, but would it have been too difficult for the average gamer to get excited about, or would people still have bought the NES in droves? Also, if Zelda is the pack-in title, has Link become the face of Nintendo? Or does Mario still pull that off anyways? That's from Dustin Faber at 16-Bit Catholic on Twitter. Thanks, Superfan Dustin. Great question.
I would say if you switch Super Mario Brothers and The Legend of Zelda, the NES would not have sold as well until Super Mario Brothers came out.
Really? You think the merits of the original... Okay.
Because, like he said, Zelda isn't exactly the most, especially the original, isn't exactly the most intuitive game to jump into for a first video game console ever. So, plus, Super Mario Brothers had the whole Mario Brothers Donkey Kong arcade tie-in beforehand. So, there was some name recognition to the Mario, or at least some character recognition to Mario. Whereas Zelda, at the time, was a completely new IP. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, been a while. Hunter, agree, disagree?
I will humbly disagree. Ooh. I don't think switching the titles in terms of the pack-in would matter. I think a better question, or maybe a more... I shouldn't say better, because it was a good question. Now I just feel like an asshole. I think a more interesting question would be is rather than switching the pack-in title from Zelda or from Mario to Zelda, what if it was like another top-down isometric adventure game like Journey to Silius, or like a Crystalis or something like that, like. And then Zelda came out. Like, would people play that game? Be like, "Oh, this is just a Crystalis ripoff. Like, this game's no good."
This is like, you know, a lame-looking version of Crystalis.
Yeah, like I think one of the things that made Zelda so popular was because it was so radically different than every game that was out on the NES. Like when the NES was shot out back in 85 for the North America, it was released with like what, 12 games, 13 games. Yeah, so I mean, you had your pick.
Most of them, I think, weren't they sports games?
A lot of them were. Because, I mean, you have to remember, Hunter, Super Mario Brothers was pretty innovative as a side-scrolling game.
No, I understand that. But I don't know. Like, I think the hardware, the time it was released, and the design was so at that right point for Nintendo to release the NES. Like, I think you could pack in any game. Here's why I say that. It's because... If Super Mario Brothers did so well as a pack-in, and it did, like, why did they change it? Why did they change it to Super Mario Brothers 3 later down the road? Like, obviously, they did it for money, but it wasn't because they didn't think that people still wouldn't purchase it because it was Super Mario Brothers. You know what I mean?
They wanted the newer, better-looking game because at that point, Super Mario Brothers 3 looked way better than Super Mario Brothers.
Well, no, that's true. Yes. You are correct.
Yeah. The two things I'm thinking of are just like with the Wii U. I mean, any hardware, it comes in different versions, and the NES was no exception. They had the action set. They had this set. I mean, remember, the NES had a version where the pack-in was Gyromite and Stack-Up for Rob the Robot. Right. I mean, like, you had Rob the Robot instead of Super Mario Brothers, and it still did fine. I'm going to go ahead and say, as long as Legend of Zelda came with Duck Hunt, Nintendo does fine. Legend of Zelda alone, Nintendo would have suffered. That's my theory.
I would say that is a very good hypothesis because...
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Who doesn't like shooting ducks and trying to endlessly shoot the stupid dog?
Yeah, or at least have the option to when you're frustrated at Legend of Zelda.
Also, that would have made a very strange dual cart. The Legend of Zelda and Duck Hunt.
But see, that's the thing, is that's perfect.
Yeah.
That's a perfect combination because you have a very hard-hitting, you know, head-scratching game. And when you get frustrated, you can easily switch over to Duck Hunt and just let loose your frustrations by pulling a trigger. That's a perfect combination.
I kind of want to see it now, like an NES cartridge with Legend of Zelda / Duck Hunt.
Somebody Photoshop Legend of Zelda and Duck Hunt
together on a main menu screen.
And track and field. Remember the triple cut?
Yes! Yes.
Yeah.
But it wasn't
Super
it was
Mario
like
Brothers Duck Hunt
track
and track and field.
Like that. It wasn't track and field. World class track.
It was world class.
It was the Olympic one where you run.
Yes. The Olympic one where you run. Very good, Joshua.
Do you think they would have
changed Duck Hunt then? Like, why would they? Do you think they would have? Well, like, instead of, like, ducks, it would be, like, keys, like the bats.
Or, like,
or
a bow
like
and
that.
Arrow instead that, of the gun.
That's a cool idea. Yeah. Like, instead of Duck Hunt, like, Keys Hunt? Like that? Oh, I'd play that. Like a Legend of Zelda first-person shooter? I would totally play that.
Like a precursor to Link's crossbow training?
Yes.
Dude, that game is terrible.
Link's crossbow training so bad. Needs a prequel.
Yes.
Like a 16-bit prequel. That's
Keys Hunt. There has to be a ROM hack for Duck Hunt that replaces.
I was
going to
say,
ducks.
There's got to be something.
Yeah. Fun fact, have you played Clue Clue Land recently? The rupees in that game predate Legend of Zelda by a few years. Like, you can tell they just borrowed assets from Clue Clue Land to make Legend of Zelda. So keep that in mind. The legacy of Legend of Zelda owes itself in part to Clue Clue Land.
I don't know. Pack-ins don't do anything for me.
But they do help sell the system. The reason the Wii was such a huge success could be debated with the inclusion of Wii Sports.
Oh, I agree. I think, but see, I think that's different. Like, I think, well, okay, I don't, all right, let me start over. My opinion would be any pack-in game should be a perfect example of what the hardware is capable of doing. Like, I think Mario Brothers did that because it was such a different idea than the games that we had at the time in terms of, like, you know, scrolling backgrounds, and it wasn't just one board or one screen per level, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe, I don't know, maybe Legend of Zelda would have been too much.
That's,
you know,
what,
like,
I think. I think
so
a pack-in game has to demonstrate the capabilities of the system, but still be very intuitive to be able to pick up and play without any instruction. Or very little instruction.
Yeah. And Zelda definitely was not that game. Like, unless if you had a few hours to bang your head against the wall, like, you weren't going anywhere in that game.
I'd like to see how many people play Legend of Zelda for the first time and completely missed the cave at the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just, why is this so hard? Why can't I attack anything? Why are these things killing me?
Especially now, because that's the big thing now. Because, if there isn't 1,000 arrows pointing in one particular direction. Like, I'm playing, I finally picked up Dead Space because everybody's been raving about it. And I'm like, I could go for, like, a sci-fi horror game. So I'm playing it, and, like, I accidentally hit one of the buttons. And, like, this line appears on the ground. I was like, what the hell is that thing? And it's this is where I'm supposed to go? Are you serious? This game's not linear enough for me? Ridiculous. I don't need a line glowing on the ground.
I have noticed a lot of games have somewhere a ability where press this button to see where to go. Which, to be honest, in some games, that is actually very helpful, because some games do absolutely nothing to tell you where you're supposed to go in a complete maze of an environment.
Yep.
It's true.
But
Zelda Duck Hunt. Somebody get on it.
Keys Hunt.
Legend of Zelda borrows art assets from Clu Clu Land and thus owes its legacy in part to that.
And this is where we move on.
Cool.
So nobody wants to talk about Clu Clu Land.
Nobody ever does. What a shame.
Nobody knows to talk about Clu Clu Land.
All I know about Clu Clu Land is he was playable in BK King of Swing.
Really?
Right.
Ooh. I should mute your microphone for that. Yuck. The protagonist of Clu Clu Land has a name, you know.
Is it Clu Clu?
I actually have no idea. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know.
Bubble?
Either.
Something like that, actually.
Bob? Yeah, something stupid like that, yeah.
Popple? Bob?
Bobble Bobble?
Yeah, I am eating a candy cane and cutting to a music break. Music break!
And we're back! That was Purple Heart by Goat, a Russian Attack remix with some nice guitar licks. Good work, Goat. Should I say, Mr. Goat. Speaking of goat stuff, it's time for the Retro Showdown.
Retro Showdown!
Anyone who doesn't know, this is the part of the show where each of us has secretly picked an old video game. We'll have 1 minute to introduce our choice, and then we'll pretty much spend the rest of the episode arguing about who picks the best game. This is the best part of our show, usually, but the best part is that you, the listener or viewer, get to vote for your favorite of the three on a poll on the podcast episode page on onemorecastle.com. So, hopefully one of our arguments will sway you, or at least will entertain you. Either way, please vote in the poll, leave comments, etc. 2 episodes ago, the theme was Games with Antlers! And the winner of that showdown was...
Does it really matter?
It was me. It was me, Bailey, with NBA Jam Tournament Edition, beating out Dear Avenger 4 and Dear Hunter 2. Pretty handily, might I add. It was.
That's just sad.
A sound victory. Also, before we proceed any further, I do feel the need to note, I should say something here. Jason is not with us tonight. I feel like I should mention that. Instead,
if you haven't noticed already.
If you haven't noticed.
Because I have been known to be mistaken for Mr. Lamb in the past.
See, I just remember that. Last time Joshua subbed in for Jason, nobody could tell the difference. You know, he just did such a perfect impression. So, yeah. Jason Lamb, not here tonight. Joshua Caleb, author of the Retro Hate biweekly column on OneMoreCastle.com, is here. So, there you have it.
There you go.
Thanks for joining us, Joshua.
Yeah, Josh, it's been good.
It has been a pleasure, gentlemen.
It's been good so far. He's even been kind enough to volunteer to be the timekeeper for our one-minute introductions. So whenever you're ready to keep my time, Joshua, I guess I'm ready to go.
You may start now.
My game was ported to the Atari ST in 1986. It's a roguelike called Larn. Yes, when I say roguelike, I mean this is one of the originals with the ASCII character art. If you're unfamiliar with the roguelike genre, I'm just going to recommend you Google it. I'm not going to explain the whole thing here, but it's not one of the really hardcore ones. In fact, the main dungeon in Larn, only 10 levels deep. The final volcano dungeon, only 3 levels deep, making this a more casual, friendlier, introductory roguelike, designed to be possible to complete in one session. It has some cool innovations, and in honor of Jason, I want to talk about the most innovative use of attacks I've ever seen in a game. It's Larn for the Atari ST.
0.5 seconds over.
Ha! Disqualified.
Nice.
Disqualified.
You guys suck.
Hey, that's proof, brother.
Proof that he clicked the button a second and a half after I got done talking.
Sure he did. Yarn.
Larn.
More like yawn. Oh!
Larn with an L as in Larn. Lego. Larn.
Sorry.
Yarn Larn?
I don't know.
Larn. Hunter's turn.
Hey, it's my turn.
Let's see what that guy brought, whatever.
Are you ready?
Yes.
You may begin.
My pick for this week's Retro Showdown is a game that I put a ton of time in as a kid and will occasionally pick up and try my chances to the likes of Snowy Hill, Steep Peak, and Mountain Nasty. One of the original Black Box NES games, it's Slalom. Released in August of 1987, Slalom pits you against 24 snow-covered tracks as you race your opponents and your friends to the fastest time to the bottom. Packed with great music tracks, challenging boards, and great head-to-head competition, Slalom is also known for being the first console release by Rare Coin-Op Ltd., and it's also the first game under said company name. And it has one of the best booty-shaking animations in the 8-bit library. It's Slalom on the NES.
10.5 seconds remaining.
Yes! Eric wins.
Yeah, I think Hunter gets the best time left award.
Yay!
Good for him. You can still beat him, Joshua. You have a chance.
You can still.
Yeah, let's see. Let me get my script here.
Boo! Just go!
Boo.
Let me look at my script.
Okay. My pick today is Geist, a first-person shooter for the GameCube where you control the soul of John Raimi, who has been separated from his body after an accident at a mysterious island compound he was sent to investigate. As a ghost, you must use your powers of possession to possess various people and objects, including but not limited to soldiers, scientists, dogs, cats, bugs, rabbits, buckets, shower heads, curtains, grenades, bombs, computers, etc., to find and reunite with your body and stop an evil plot to take over the world because of video games. 14 seconds.
Because video games.
Because video games. It's like that old Justin McElroy comment on the moment he realized he loved video games. He was playing 50 Cent's Blood in the Sand when his motorcycle hit a ramp and the ramp exploded.
Nice. Good times. Good times.
So, I don't know if you guys noticed, but I actually got booted off just before Hunter's game introduction began.
Nice.
So I came back just in time, Hunter, to hear you say, and it has one of the best booty shaking animations on the NES. And I was like, what game did he pick? And he said Slalom, and I was like, oh yeah, yeah, Slalom.
Yeah, booty shaking animation, man.
I know.
It's good.
It's like that Simpsons real good. Reference with Ned Flanders in his ski suit. Like wearing
oh, nothing God. At all. It feels like I'm wearing
nothing yeah. at all. Nothing at all.
Nice.
So funny. Oh man, good showdown, guys. Good. That was a blast. I want to thank our sponsor.
That's it. We're done. That was great.
Diet Pepsi.
Oh, wait. No.
I want to remind. What? What?
No. We got no.
Oh right! I didn't talk about how I picked my game in honor of Jason since he's not here, because my right. game has the coolest and Ooh. Most Bailey-approved implementation of taxes in a video game ever. You guys ready for this? Are you guys ready?
Okay.
Okay, so usually a roguelike, it might take you hundreds of thousands of in-game turns to complete. It might take you months or even a couple years on a saved game. My favorite is Angband, which takes place in the world of Lord of the Rings. If you like Lord of the Rings and roguelikes, check out Angband, best ever. Download the actual graphic set too. Two great game. The point is, Larn's a little different. You can complete it in one sit-down. I mean, there's still like a skill element to it. There's a learning curve, but you can beat it in one sitting. But every time you beat Larn, each successive playthrough is a little more difficult, which is really cool, really innovative for its genre. But here's the best part. You don't get to keep all the gold you found. When you start another game, you have to pay a victory tax. There is an office in the town that you pay a victory tax, a portion, a percentage of the gold you won from your whole last game, you have to pay back before you start a new one.
So the town awesome. You're rescuing is a bunch of greedy jerks
oh, no, no, no.
that...
You're not rescuing the town. The town is never in danger. The whole point of the game is you're supposed to become strong enough to go into the volcano to find the potion that will save your daughter's life. You're not saving the town. The town, they're happy to get you taxes. It's Canada. I mean, they're not in danger.
What's the point of that, though?
Well, and it also is probably one of the first games to have New Game Plus Infinite and actually punish you for beating the game.
Yeah, like that's exactly what it is. Like I'm fine with playing through a game. Play through a game, beat it one sitting, that's fine. Like, I'm okay with that. But, and then, you know, the New Game Plus, which makes it harder, okay, that makes sense. But if it's an infinite, like, what's the point of continued play? Like,
to see how many times you can replay it until it becomes impossibly hard where you just have to give up.
Exactly.
I just don't see what the point of that is. Like, what does that achieve?
You don't see the point of playing a game more than once?
I'm fine with replaying games, very short games, over and over if it's different every time.
Yeah.
But if all it does is scale the difficulty until it becomes impossible, that's boring.
I'm just going to play another game.
Not if you enjoy the game. Well, I can see that. Am I really the only one here who sees the appeal of that? Am I really? Okay.
I see the appeal. It's just the execution is poor. Like,
that's
I don't see
like
what the purpose
your opinion,
of
it
was.
Man. Stupid sexy Flanders.
But you know what I mean, though? Like, I just don't...
Well, see, like, the Stanley Parable. That game is an incredibly short game that you can beat in, like, 5 minutes if you want to.
Right.
But you'll only see a fraction of the game because you keep playing it over and over and over again, and if you keep making different choices, you'll get different part endings in different areas to explore, and you just find more of the game.
Let me back up here. Have either of you ever played an RPG?
Yes.
Yes.
Several.
Have you ever played an RPG where you had choices as to either your own character class or the constituent classes of your party?
Yes.
Did you ever beat said RPG and then go back and wonder, huh, could I beat it if I tweaked my party a bit or with this class instead of this? I want to see what that experience is like as a rogue instead of a wizard.
I often wondered that in the middle of the game when I was up against a boss I couldn't beat. But no, I never finished an RPG and then went back
it's not unusual for a roguelike to offer the same.
I'll play along. Yes, Bailey.
Dungeons and Dragons style class system. You're not playing again just because of the tweaked difficulty. That's just a bonus cherry on the pie that is the choices offered to you as an RPG connoisseur.
Picking different classes and changing skill trees or job status in an RPG like that, that adds variety. It doesn't necessarily add to the difficulty.
Or like, the replayability.
Right. Adding difficulty to a game doesn't make it different. You know
it
what I mean?
Like,
it doesn't
harder.
Give you a different experience. Yeah, I mean, that's it. I've met people who play first-person shooters, and they play it on the hardest difficulty setting the second they play it, because they feel like if they want to be competitive, they have to start on the hardest setting. That's fine. I get that. But, like, sooner or later, it becomes nonsensical.
Sooner or later, you have to admit that the computer is better than you because it's a computer and it can cheat.
Yeah, and that's not entertainment to me. Like, I like a challenge, don't get me wrong, but after a while, it's like you're just beating a dead horse. And as much fun as that sounds, in the video game realm, probably not the best ideas. I don't know.
No.
Let's talk about Geist. I want to talk about Geist.
Geist is a very awesome and unique game because you get to play as a ghost and you can possess almost anything.
I was super, super excited about this game when the previews were coming out and all that stuff. And then I picked it up and it's terrible.
Why is it terrible?
It's just bad. It's just really bad. Like, I get
the shooting mechanics.
Yeah. Well, see, okay. So that's what I was going to get to. Like, the idea being a ghost, being able to possess other people, like that's how you change, quote unquote, change weapons and get different armor and stuff like that. Like, that's really cool. I like that idea. But at its core, it's just an awful, poorly designed first-person shooter.
I will admit it may not work well as a shooter because I don't think that's what the developers were intending for it to be at its core.
Right.
Its core concept is more to be a puzzle game. How can you possess this person to get through this area to gain access to this person or this object to make your way around the compound because for whatever reason you're a ghost who can't go through walls. So you have to possess various objects and creatures, and the people cannot just be possessed willy-nilly. They have to be frightened first, become weak, so you can possess them. So you have to possess various inanimate objects and basically become a poltergeist and make those inanimate objects.
Some of the puzzles in Geist are annoyingly unintuitive.
It's one of those games, we've all played these games, where it's like you're playing and you're like, wow, it's got a lot of great ideas, and well, it's not perfect. Like, it needs a lot of... I would love to play the sequel. You know what I mean? Like, I think this would be a perfect sequel game. And it was never done because it came out at such a late life at the end of the GameCube era that people kind of just forgot about it.
And Nintendo owned the IP, so...
So it'll never get created because Nintendo hates everything that could be cool.
Exactly. But Geist is actually, I would almost call, a spiritual successor to Haunting starring Poltergeist.
Now.
Because...
Let's not do that.
Haunting starring Poltergeist... No. You had to go and possess various objects and furniture to scare the living daylights out of people.
Don't do that to me.
It's true.
Don't you do that. Don't
but
you dare do that
feature,
to me.
Both have you play as a ghost, and you have to possess things to scare people.
To yeah, but I'm not running around with a gun shooting stuff. And dude, he had a mohawk.
or a flat top, and he was wearing a black vest. I mean, come on. Way better game.
The Geist has a little, has a creepy little girl with a teddy bear who guides you around.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. So, okay, you mentioned the bucket. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the bucket? Do you remember that scene? Because it's really bad.
It's not fun.
I remember there's a scene with a trash can.
Okay, let's talk about that one. So just so everybody understands how taking possession of inanimate objects worked in Geist.
There's a scientist that has access to a certain part of the lab that's locked off where you can't get to. So, in order to possess the scientist to make him walk into that area of the lab, you have to possess this trash can next to the scientist and make it explode or spew trash. So the scientist gets really scared and spooked, so then you can possess the scientist and walk him into the secret area of the lab and continue on your way.
Does anybody else find that just to be dumb?
That is incredibly interesting, creative, and fun. You can also possess dogs and cats, which dogs help you move around because they have security clearance like normal guards, apparently. You can also possess explosives and make them blow up.
I don't know, man. Like, I think they just went too far with it. You know what I mean? Like, they were just throwing darts up against the board and you'd be like, let's be a trash can and a grenade and a cat. That'll work. What about just regular people with guns? Yeah, we'll do that too. Yeah, just keep throwing stuff.
You can possess
that's what this sounds like.
You can possess a mirror and show a person a different reflection than their own.
Oh, man, that sounds cool. If it was like released on the 360 and the polygon count was actually high enough to matter. You know what I mean? I mean, don't get me wrong. The GameCube looked great. Had a great hardware for a system so small. But it
GameCube
still didn't.
Had like the best hardware of the time.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I'm just saying, like, I don't know. Like, I think if it was either released later or if there was a sequel, I think your game
wouldn't
suck as bad as it does.
I would absolutely love to play a sequel, especially since I've been playing Murdered Soul Suspect for a review, and which is basically if Haunting starring Poltergei is an isometric, puzzle-y adventure game, and if Geist is a first-person shooter version of that, Murdered Soul Suspect is a third-person point-and-click adventure of Geist.
Wow, that's really complicated, man.
It's also a really awesome game with surprisingly high production values and good voice acting for a Square Enix game.
What's it called again?
Murdered Soul Suspect. Soul spelled S-O-U-L.
So, soul.
Because you play a ghost of a police officer who has been murdered, and now you have to solve your own murder.
Awesome. I'll tell you, I will put it on my list. How about that?
It is definitely a game that should be played at least once.
That's as much as I will give you. That's as much. Let's talk about Slalom.
Slalom sucks. That is just a bad game.
So good. Did you see the booty shaking animation?
Slalom looks really good. The animation and everything looks beautiful, but it looks like a beast to actually play.
The gameplay is so shallow. The graphics are good at conveying a sense of speed, bad at making you feel like you're really in control of what's going on.
You just go side to side.
You have that guy's butt sticking up in your face the whole time.
Yeah, dude, booty shaking animation.
This is a pretty sweet booty, I guess. But just...
Yeah. Mount Nasty. Come on.
No.
I don't know. Putting butt animation and Mount Nasty in the same context.
Can we please incorporate Butt Nasty into the episode title somehow? Mount Booty Shaking Butt Nasty. I don't know. Mount Nasty Booty.
It's too much.
Mount Nasty Booty.
There you go.
I don't want to talk about Slalom. I don't like it. I've reviewed it on NintendoLegend.com.
How do you not like it?
It's not fun. It's a bad game. It was.
It
has a little historical distinction as Rare's first blah, 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 but it's not actually good.
Just because you're not good at the game, Bailey, doesn't make it a bad game. We've been through this before.
I don't know. I think being bad at a game is a perfectly good reason to have it be a bad game.
But if there were taxes in it, he'd like it. In honor of Jason Lamb. Taxes.
How on earth do you even spell slalom?
It's S-L-A-L-O-M. Swallum.
There. Okay.
Yeah, so like the perspective is kind of like Ridge Racer or 3D World Runner, or it's that Mario Kart-esque, the actual main sprite just goes left to right while the actual background moves around you. Like, it's pretty cool. Not gonna lie. Pretty cool. There's not a lot of skiing games. This was the predecessor for 1080 snowboarding on the N64. Super awesome. You don't even know. See, look, you're playing it. You're having a blast.
No, I'm just trying to figure out how on earth to make this guy do bunny hops.
Yeah. Look at that. Look at that butt shaking animation, dude. Look at it go. It's amazing.
I don't know.
It makes me feel good just watching it. There is a very good sense of challenge within the game, especially if you're playing with a second player. You guys can race for time. You get extra points for freestyling, like if you hit the bunny hill and do a jump or a stretch or whatever the hell it's called. That goes towards your total score. Very cool.
I don't even know how to do a trick. It won't let me do a trick.
I wish I could help you, but look at it, man. Look at the mountains with the purple.
No, I'll give you the graphics and animation are amazing, and just
the music's really good. If you listen to the music, it's really cool. Just saying, easily the best pick for this retro showdown.
Maybe the best looking.
Oh yeah, it's way better looking than Geist or Yoon or Loon.
Wait, did I win or did I lose? It says game over.
No, you lost. You ran out of time. You suck.
Well, see, that sucks.
You're bad. You're bad at the game. There you go. See, two-player game, Mount Nasty, boom.
Okay, we're gonna see Mount Nasty.
Oh, we're gonna see it, and it's gonna be beautiful. Oh, look at it. Oh gosh. Oh man.
Why is it going so fast?
Look at you go! You're on Mount Nasty, man.
Why are there trees in the middle? Why are there trees in the middle of this ski slope?
Because that's how it works. Mount Nasty is out to get you.
Why do the trees get bigger when I approach them?
My butt animation's out to get you.
Booty animations.
Yep. So here's the thing about slalom. If you want to play a from-behind racing type game on the NES, play Rad Racer. Play Mach Rider. Like, yep. There are better games of the genre. Like, I'll admit slalom's 3D World not Runner. Like the worsty worst.
But it's way better than your guys' games.
No. Lauren is good.
Lauren
is classic.
Kirby's epic Lauren, I'm not on board with, but I think Geist is the more unique pick.
Geist
has more character.
Geist, the whole no.
Geist, how many games do you get to play as a ghost?
But that's the thing. Geist is the kind of game that gets onto these most top 40 underrated. Overlooked GameCube games list because it's
I think
unique,
the word you're looking
for,
Bailey, is
great.
Gem.
Oh, yes, thank you. Top 30 GameCube gems, everybody. But it makes those lists because it's different, but it's not necessarily because it's outstanding. Like, it's not bad, but it's not. I'd rather play Time Splitters 2 if I want to play a first person shooter.
I agree.
I'd say slalom probably goes under those as well.
It's a black box game. Everybody had this game. You don't have this game? You should get this game. It's good.
I had very few NES games. I mostly played Super Mario Brothers and McKids.
Really? McKids?
Yes, I had McKids. It was a terrible, terrible game.
I agree. Bailey, final arguments. Let's get this son of a bitch over with.
Lauren, typically roguelikes are a bit unapproachable from a new person perspective. They're not the friendliest of genres, but Lauren is the perfect compromise. It's easy to get into, yet very much enjoyable and immense replay value. It's a good game. Hardly anyone's ever heard of it either. A true Retro Showdown champion.
All right, Joshua, Caleb, final arguments. Why should anybody vote for Goost on the GameCube?
You should vote for Geist on the GameCube because it is the spiritual successor to Haunting starring Poltergeist. It is a very unique and fun little first-person-esque puzzle shooter game with interesting game mechanics and some rather unique situations that you have to solve because you get to explore almost everywhere of this compound.
Even though you can't go through walls.
But
no, you should vote for Solemn because not only...
Solemn.
Black box.
Solomon's Key.
Solomon's Key. That's Solemn. A great game. I should have brought that.
You should vote
for Solemn because not only is it Rare's first attempt at a console release and it was amazing, do not forget the best booty shaking animation in the 8-bit library.
When you need quality booty shaking, Eric Hunter's got your back.
I got your back.
Or don't you worry, you've got his. You've got his back.
Depends on who wants to do the booty shaking.
Shake it in your face.
There you go.
I want to give some shout outs to our live stream commenters. Thanks for watching. Rizzard Core, Dustin Faber, Captain Knucklehead, good to see you. Chronoslinger, Valerie Minnick. Anyone else who's watching but not commenting, thank you guys so much. We're glad to do this for you. Just a reminder, we broadcast a live stream 7:30 p.m. Central Time, Thursday evenings typically. Otherwise, you can always listen to the audio version up on Monday mornings as well on onemorecastle.com. Please go to the episode page, vote in the Retro Showdown, leave comments. We're going to have t-shirts available soon. That's exciting. How about you guys? Hunter, any shout-outs, plugs, recommendations? Please for
me. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Hunter. My indie game review blog is IamEricM.com. And my shout out goes to Mr. Joshua Caleb. Thanks for hanging out on a short notice, man. It's always a good time.
Yes, thank you.
Short notice is always the best notice.
Oh, I like the way
it's better than no notice at all. And
shorts.
You're fired.
Comfy and easy to wear. I want to give a special shout out to Google because every time it kicks me out of the Hangout, it gives me a very helpful message that says there's something wrong with my connection and it's having difficulty. Thank you, Google. But my sincere apologies for my weather-related technical issues. It has been intensely frustrating. Thank you for you two making it an even better show in my absence, I bet.
Ooh.
Yeah. Let's be honest.
That is entirely possible.
I am on the verge of murdering someone, so who knows what's going
to happen. Hopefully, no. It's your ISP.
Yes, yeah. So thanks to everyone for watching, listening, voting, commenting. What do you want?
Josh, do you have any shout-outs? Where can we find you?
Oh, yes, you can find me at JoshuaCaleb75 on Twitter. Also occasionally writing reviews on Official VGHC and the Retro Hate column on One More Castle.
It's pretty good. I really like the one you put up today, man.
Yes, that was...
It's good. One of my favorite things done in a while.
I think I've referenced Mario Foot on my site at least 3 times. And every time I always link it back to that article you wrote because it's so beautifully written and it makes so much sense. Like,
yeah,
it's one of those mechanics that was like, there's no name for this, but it's annoying as hell.
Yes, I know. I was trying to find, kept getting frustrated with this mechanic and I finally went back and looked at Mario. I'm like, you son of a glitch. You started this.
Thanks again, Joshua, for joining us. And to our listeners, last but not least, I would remind you, just remember, you are a bad enough dude to rescue the president. See you next week!